2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLPodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Welcome in. You're listening to The Scotsman. The Aggie women get their first Mountain West win of the season, while the Aggie men fall flat in Reno before returning to Logan. And a little bit of spectrum magic for the Utah State men's basketball team in a win over UNLV on Tuesday night. I'm Brian Preece. The man on my right is Mr. Hootenanny Tran. I was thinking about adding another Y in there, but
Tran. I'm interesting. Hi, it's me. I'm the problem. It's me. Welcome, Brian. I'm big stuff happening for Utah State this week. I'm all over the place, like you just said. The women's basketball team with their first in conference win. That's pretty big. But you were also up there in Logan for UNLV. So we'll get to that a little bit later. Where do you want to start today?
Let's start with the men's basketball team. But I want to circle back to this Nevada game, because I'm trying to figure out who this team is. We see them step on the floor. They're one of the best shooting teams in the country. Consistently, Stephen Ashworth. We've got Taylor Funk, and then you've got other guys who can contribute from deep, like Max Shulga and Sean Bairstow, and. You go into Nevada, you're playing a good team, a very good Nevada team, and second half it's tied at 64, about seven and a half minutes left, and
just get run,
absolutely run out of the gym. No. And I don't know what happened. What I don't understand about this team is, in spite of how good of a shooting team they are, they manage to go through these cold stretches seemingly every single game, where they're going 3, 4, 5 minutes without a field goal, sometimes without points when they're not able to get to the free throw line. And it's just weird to have such a strong offensive team with so many options that can go cold for so long, and they do it so consistently.
They need to find other ways to score. We talked about this last week. They don't have, we're talking about plan Bs or plan Cs. When their offense isn't executing, they don't really have any other way to try to score, and that's gonna hurt them. And this is a Mountain West Conference that is eating itself a little bit. It's a good conference, but the problem is that there's not going to be too many dominant teams, it looks like, from the conference.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the Mountain West, and this is a conference that, if you look at the RPI, the Mountain West is rated the fourth best conference in the country. They're better than the Big East, better than the ACC, better than the Pac-12, Utah fans, the WCC for BYU, Gonzaga, and those teams. The Mountain West is rated as a better conference top to bottom than each of those. But when I look at it, that's what it comes down to, is exactly what you're talking about, is you have to wonder, as a Mountain West basketball fan, if this conference is just going to cannibalize itself. Yep. Right now you've got Boise State at the top, 5-1 in conference. One of Utah State's losses came in Boise. They're 15-4 overall. They've won 5 straight. Spectacular. San Diego State, 4-1, 13-4 overall. They're second in conference. The Aggies' other loss in the Mountain West was against Nevada. Mm-hmm. They're 5-2, 15-5.
We talked about New Mexico coming into the conference.
Yeah.
So, on one hand, you're going to have Utah State, or everybody in the Mountain West, is going to be open. It's going to be open come tournament time, which is only a month and a half away. But, you know, it is also going to hurt because you're not going to get multiple teams from Mountain West. So,
well, see, and I would challenge that a little bit. The question for me is the Mountain West going to get two or three teams, mm-hmm. or are they going to be able to get four teams?
Interesting.
How much are they going to eat each other alive? Utah State, we've seen them. We know that that's a team
right.
at their best that is capable of winning an NCAA tournament game. New Mexico, they're a very top-heavy talent-wise athletic team. They don't have as much depth as Utah State does. But like their top three match up with anybody else in the conference.
So the question is, can USU be consistent enough in the next month and a half here? And we're seeing, like, we see them go up to Boise and just, they got run out of there, too. You know, really, they were not in that game at all. UNR, that second half. But then, you know, again, last night, you were there. Really, a UNLV team that's tough. It's a good team.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
They hit this big shot to big shot after big shot in the stretch, which was nice.
Well, and you bring up the word consistency, and what I see, as I'm trying to nail this down, I'm looking through the numbers and, you know, comparing Aggie losses, shooting percentages, execution and thing like that versus the games that the Aggies win. One thing that I keep coming back to, and I wonder if this is what could really put the Aggies over, or not put them over the top, but allow them to take that next step, is getting Rylan Jones back healthy.
Yes.
I mean, Rylan, after missing last night against UNLV, he's missed six games this year. We talk about Boise State. It was in the second half early when he went down with an injury. It was another concussion, his second of the season. And so, you know, first of all, you're just worried about Rylan Jones and his long-term health. And basketball is secondary. Basketball doesn't matter when it comes to
multiple concussions. It's a really scary health
issue. In a month
right.
of time, maybe
yes.
less.
I mean,
yeah.
These are like actual injuries to your brain.
Yep.
You know? So, I mean, before, like, we used to call them mild concussion. We used to call them, whatever. But as we were getting
dinged up.
Yeah, we're studying more CT, studying a lot more stuff. Like, we're getting a lot more information that these brain injuries have lasting effects. And so, is there any update about with where Ryan's at in his recovery right now?
So last night I had a chance to ask Coach Ryan Odom about it, and really there is not any
right.
update on Rylan. They're not even giving specifics on what the injury is. It's been reported, but on broadcast as a concussion, and that's where he's at with it. But I haven't personally gotten that information, gotten that word from the athletics department. So I'm saying that as
right.
a secondary reporting source to begin with.
If it is a concussion, concussions are really, because if they're not saying that he's close now, he's probably not close.
So, well, last night talking to Coach Odom, he said that he wouldn't give any time frame.
Right.
There were no dates mentioned. Rylan has not practiced since the game against Boise State where he was hurt. And all that Coach Odom would say last night was, our concern is worrying about getting Rylan back healthy.
Yeah. All right, so, I mean, just hearing that, hearing what you said there, and just, I'm going to assume it's going to be a minute, if at all, if he comes back this year. So, if let's say it's a while, how do the Aggies handle not having that secondary ball handle? I mean, he was a starting point guard.
Mm-hmm.
Steven Ashworth has come off the bench, and so that's throwing, I mean, that was working really well. Like, Ashworth was like one of the leading scorers off the bench in the nation. So how has that changed? Because like now we're stretching guys more minutes. I don't even know who the secondary ball handler would be. Like, who's playing backup right now? How are they playing those non-Steven Ashworth minutes?
Right now you've got R.J. Idlerock.
That's right. That's right.
Running the backup point guard position. He's a guy who started some games last year. He's a capable player, but he's not the calming presence, the experienced guy that Rylan Jones is. And you mentioned the two things where I think it makes a really big difference, not having Rylan Jones on the floor. And it's one, having that secondary ball handler, and not just secondary ball handler, having somebody to give Steven Ashworth a rest, to get him off of the ball.
Right.
Steven Ashworth is the best shooter on this basketball team, possibly the best shooter in the conference, one of the best in the country.
Right.
And so if you're Utah State, you are a better basketball team when he's catching and shooting rather than having the ball in his hand. I mean, Ashworth finishes last night against UNLV with 9 assists on the night. He's a great distributor. He's very good at the point guard position. But you're a better team if the ball is not in his hands all night long.
He had that deep three with, a couple minutes left. Mm-hmm. Came off the screen. I remember I could hear Scotty G's voice like, Ashworth wide open straight away. You know, there's a big three down the stretch there. You want Ashworth off the ball.
Yep.
Running off screens. I'm a J.C. Carroll-like. Finding ways to manipulate. That's just his game, right? And so, it'd be nice to get that back, but it could be a minute. So.
And the second thing also directly relates to Steven Ashworth and that point guard position is without Rylan Jones, you are forcing Steven Ashworth into the starting lineup, which isn't necessarily the worst thing in the world, but what it does is it takes this Utah State bench that with Ashworth, with Dan Akin, and with Zee Hamoda was one of the highest scoring benches in the country, and now this is a team that's scoring in single figures off of the bench. Last night, let me see if I can find my box score here. So last night off the bench, USU ends up scoring just 5 points against Nevada. I think they scored 9 points off the bench.
Yeah.
Dan Akin is the primary contributor for this team off of the bench these days. And the last two games, both against Nevada and last night against UNLV, you see teams realize that, you know, we talk about a lack of a plan B. If the 3-point shot's not falling, it's really difficult for this offense, and defenses are going after Dan Akin. Every time he touches in the post, it was an immediate double team from UNLV all night long. And Dan, for all of the things that he does well on a basketball court, reading and reacting and passing out of a double team is not something that is a strength of his. And so I don't want to say it's easy, but defenses with the right approach can get Utah State out of their game plan and force them into a lot of misses, and it's a struggle. The Aggies are winning right now. Let's not act like this is a team that's they're 15-4.
Right.
They're a very good basketball team. The sky is not falling. We're not being Chicken Little right now.
There are cracks in the foundation.
There's cracks in the foundation, exactly. Right. And these are some things that need to get solved without Rylan Jones. The ceiling of this basketball team is severely limited.
How many minutes did Idle Rock play last night?
RJ Idle Rock last night finished with, I want to make sure this is, I already did this wrong. I gave you the bench points for the first half.
Oh, the first half bench points. Okay, all right.
But they scored 13 points off the bench night. Doesn't matter.
13?
Good. No, they were averaging over 30 points a game off the bench Steven Ashworth is coming off.
Steve Ashworth's 17 points is a big part.
Yeah.
So, but even then, without 17, you know, you're hoping to get, you know, 15, 16, you know, closer to 20.
You would hope, right? RJ Idle Rock, to answer your question, played 16 and a half minutes last night. He was okay. He ends up with a minus 15, which obviously doesn't look very good at all on the box score. When you watch the game, I don't think he played that poorly. He finishes with, let's see, Idle Rock scores 4 points last night. He's not a guy that scores a lot, but he's a spot filler, is what RJ Idle Rock. I'm not trying to dismiss him, but
gotta get Ashworth some rest in there. And that's the thing, is like shooting his legs, right? So late game, especially in
the thin air of Utah, the elevation.
Elevation, thank you, God.
I got you.
Yeah, thank you. Elevation, like I remember when I was in college, like I had a professor saying, you know, Utah State should be able to run most teams off the floor in Logan because like teams are coming in, like they're not trained like NBA players are. They come in and like maybe the first half they're okay, but by the second half they should be sucking wind. But it goes both ways. Like these Utah athletes who are trained in this atmosphere. But you know, Ashworth needs to rest enough to keep the legs under him to be able to shoot at a high level later in the game.
Well, Steven Ashworth's wind, his lung capacity isn't something that gives me cause for concern, but him wearing down, Ashworth is not a big guy. He's not somebody that you look at and he looks like he lives in the weight room and can take a beating on a college basketball floor. You watched that UNLV game last night. Steven Ashworth was the smallest guy on the floor every minute of the game that he was out there. And at times, he was being defended by, 6'2", 6'3", probably 200 pounds. Yep. And it's really difficult. And that pounding takes its toll over the course of a season, and you wonder how long, you know, if you're Ryan Odom, how long can you keep depending on Steven Ashworth to play? Last night, he only sat for a minute 29 of that game. How long can you do that?
That wears on you. That's tiring.
We're already without Rylan Jones, and Ashworth is a guy who has dealt with injuries in the past as well. He's shown himself to be a fast healer, but if you lose Steven Ashworth, the season's down the toilet right now.
I mean, like, so they get a good win against UNLV at home in the Spectrum, Spectrum Magic.
Great win.
And then, so what's next for these Aggies?
San Jose State comes in. They stay home. San Jose State's going to be Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock.
We hope that should be not a get-right game, but a game that they...
As much of a get-right game as you have in the Mountain West.
Yes. So hopefully that's one that they can pull a win out of there. And, well, I mean, like you talked about you were up there. You were visiting the Spectrum, and you said this is your second game, but this one was much different than the first game because the students are back, and the atmosphere is... Tell about the atmosphere last night.
So, last story before we move on, but I was sitting courtside at the scorer's table, and I ended up next to Doug Hoffman, the Aggies football SID. And so we were chatting a little bit throughout the game, and the last play, the inbound pass goes to Sean Bairstow, and Bairstow hits the free throw line jumper to give Utah State the 4-point lead, and they end up winning 75-71. But that environment, the crowd in the Spectrum with 10, 12 seconds on the clock, I think it was, and Bairstow hitting that jumper. I grew up in Logan. We've talked about that, given our background of Utah State and why we're doing this podcast. But I've seen easily 100 games in the Spectrum over the course of my life. And that moment when Sean Bairstow hit that jumper, that was the loudest I have ever heard the Spectrum. Right. And maybe that had something to do with the fact that I'm sitting courtside. All the sound is filtering down to me rather than where I used to sit previously as a fan.
Somebody just posted one of those like loudest stadiums in every state or whatever Utah State was. It's not as big as the Huntsman. It's not as big as Marriott.
I got a sound level warning on my watch last night in the Spectrum.
Oh, there you go.
Hey, it's too loud in there.
Like Utah State, like not only are they loud, they're coordinated as fans. So that makes a big difference, like their coordination. Like I went to BYU and Gonzaga this last week, and they're loud. Mm-hmm. Like, they're good. The BYU has a good crowd. But I'm like, it's not Spectrum, guys. Like you guys are good. But the Spectrum is just a different level, a different stadium environment. Like, this is how you get players to come to Utah State. And, like, you show them, like, hey, you see this crowd here? Like, when your team is good, whatever you see here, this is what they call magic. I should have had you buy me a Spectrum Magic t-shirt that was selling up there.
You should have. Well, come on, you dropped the ball on that one. But, no, it was interesting. As he hits that shot, the crowd goes absolutely wild. And I look over at Doug, and I say, Doug, in this moment, and little aside, as sports media, we're not going to the games to cheer. We're not fans. We're even if I like the team, even if it's my childhood team, I'm not there to cheer. But that the Spectrum crowd, the way that building went nuts last night, I couldn't help but just sit there courtside and smile. It wasn't because the Aggies won.
Right.
It was because of that environment and like just the opportunity to sit there courtside. I could have touched the midcourt stripe last night. What an experience. Right. And then I'm thinking to myself, they're paying me to do this.
It's an infectious.
Life's incredible, man. And the Spectrum.
Yeah. When you're a cameraman, you're right there on the floor. Like I used to sit right in front of the student section and it's fun. And I even asked the guys who went to Utah State, Weber State a month ago. And I was like, I was a little worried. I'm like, okay, it's the beginning of the year. It's not really. And the guys who went there were like, oh, yeah, it was great. Great environment. So that's good. So hopefully it won the women's team, right? Getting their first win. Let's see if they can start building on that.
Yeah, Aggie women pick up their first Mountain West win of the season, 68-58 at Fresno State. So not just a Mountain West win, but a win on the road. Yep. Spectacular. Looking at the box score here for this Aggie team, four players score in double figures. Maria Carvalho ends up with 16. Tamia Robinson, Prima Chelas both score 15. But the thing that really stood out to me is the Aggie defensive effort. Fresno State made just 33% of their shots. They were 4 of 25 from the three-point line, 16% on the night. Really hard to win a basketball game shooting that poorly.
On the house of those bricks. Yeah, Utah State, that's again, we're talking about, you know, just small wins. Like, I mean, we don't think the Utah State women's team is going to really make a lot of noise in the tournament this year, but, like, it's a first-year coach.
Yep.
You know, you're really trying to build and, like, show that, hey, you know, this is a good. You can build off this win, get a couple more, and then next year, you know, because, again, they're bringing in grad transfers right now. I mean, there's going to be a lot of turnover next year. It's really, like, what can you build this year that can carry over next year that are not players?
Yes. So. Yeah, you're taking these positive moments, you're holding on to these things, you're remembering it, and that's what you're building the program off of. Because overall, it's just a difficult season and not a lot.
I wonder what that win was like win for them, because like they know, like, they've had a lot of tough losses. So to get their first road win in conference, I mean, I wonder how that felt for them.
Yeah, you would imagine that's a pretty exciting moment for not just the players, but for Coach Ard getting that first conference win of her career. The Aggie women back in action tomorrow night as we're recording here on Wednesday, January 18th. The Aggies are going to be playing Air Force. Falcons will come into the Spectrum Thursday night, 6 p.m. And then it's a three-game week for the Aggie women. They're going to play Saturday night as well, traveling down to San Jose State. The men hosting San Jose State.
I do kind of like – it's always like, all right, so the men play San Jose State, the women play San Jose State, but they play the opposite which you think it was safe travel if they just all played in one bus or one plane or whatever, right? Like,
you would think. I don't know.
It's not my money, so. All right, so we got Utah State with three games, women's three games this week. Got the men with two games. Again, you know, both coming off wins. So, win streaks. Congratulations to Utah Gymnastics real quick. They came in third of the Best of West.
Yes.
I think Sophie Sullivan. A 9.9 on the beam, I think. So really, I mean, it got overshadowed because
Sullivan ended up being named the MRGC gymnast of the beam.
Yeah, it was Sophie. Yeah, Sophie
gymnast
Sullivan,
of the
yeah.
week, right?
Sophie Sullivan was I'm pretty sure named that. So let me just confirm.
I'm going to be writing a story about it. I want to make sure I get this right.
She got a 9.9 on beam. So yeah. I'm guaranteed she was. Yeah, the Mountain Rim beam specialist of the week.
Yep.
So
yeah.
I came in third. I mean, them and the BYU team obviously having a lot of turnover from last year. So that, you know, pretty good SEU, still a very solid team. And of course the Red Rock. I mean, like, this how, like, she got a 9.9. I mean, five Red Rocks got 9.9s or higher, so that's a pretty good score. Regardless, so big week for the gymnastics team. They're taking Boise on this week.
No, the gymnastics heads down to Cedar City. They're gonna face Southern Utah. Yeah. Just a two-team meet.
Time to see the Thunderbirds again. So.
Yep. Yeah, so that'll be Friday, January 20th at 7 p.m.
Devin Tompkins out of the playoffs now. So I think that's our. That might be our last local that we have to worry about.
Probably. A couple other things going on in Aggie athletics. This week, excuse me, had a moment there. You know, as the spring kind of ticks along, it seems like every week you get more and more sports going. So the Utah State indoor track and field team started last week in the BYU Invitational, and they will continue their season at the Nebraska Invitational this weekend, Saturday, January 21st. So if you're a track and field aficionado, the USU indoor team's getting that season going. And then Utah State men's tennis, they're going to be in Oregon for a couple of matches. They take on the Oregon Ducks on January 20th, and then on Sunday, January 22nd, they'll be in Portland taking on the University of Portland. Maybe it's Portland University. I don't know. I wish I was better.
It's good to travel and, you know, go do Oregon and Portland at the same time. Just saying. Money-wise, that makes sense.
It's really smart. And one more thing. This is going to take a little bit of reading for me, but I wanted to make sure and mention Utah State announced they're going to have their 20th Hall of Fame class inducted. It'll be Saturday, April 15th. And this year, it's so they're doing it this year in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of Title IX. So for those who aren't familiar, Title IX is basically the ruling that unlocked educational and athletic opportunities for women in college sports and really opened the door for college athletics to go full bore into women's sports. So it's been a great thing, but this 20th class is going to include seven Aggies that have participated in programs all over the map for this Utah State team. So let's go ahead and get through this. Tana Call Davis, one of the most accomplished gymnasts in school history. We've got Chantel Flannery, a two-time WAC Offensive Player of the Year in soccer. Krista Larson Duplessis, an All-American track and field athlete. Hey, back to the track and field. Jerry McGann, one of the best all-around women's basketball players, also the first 1,000-point scorer in school history. Danae Molman Pruden, a three-time first-team all-conference volleyball player. Christine Thompson. Thompson was one of just seven softball All-Americans in Utah State history. Marilyn Weiss served as Utah State's Director of Women's Athletics for 6 years from 1975 to 1981 with the Aggies winning three national championships under her term. But, I think it's special. The Title IX stuff is something that I take a lot of interest in. Yeah. You know, somebody who's been trying to break into sports media, one way that I have tried to do that is by following and spreading the word of women's sports. Being down here in Salt Lake, I've spent a lot of time with the University of Utah women's softball team, the Utah women's basketball team, and it's just exciting, and I love that Title IX came into play and made these things possible for these women, because I think back to the early 90s with like Pat Summitt and Tennessee basketball, and it was a completely different game back then, and the way women's basketball has evolved, women's sports in general, have evolved, and
we're seeing a lot more mainstream.
Really get a national spotlight. You get the women's national soccer team here in the U.S.
Obviously, there's a long way to go, but like it's good to see strides. It's good to see them on the national stage.
Yeah, without a doubt. Where can they find you on the social media, blog, or Twitter sphere?
Yeah, right now my only Twitter is at WhoTransSuperman. That's HUUTRAN Superman. A little rhyming there to help people out. How about you, Brian? Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at BPreece24. That's at BPreece24. Make sure and follow at KSL Sports. Right. KSLSports.com for all of your Utah sporting needs, because we're number one.
When are you heading back to Spectrum Magic? What do you think?
Right now, it looks like the next time I'm going to be headed up to the Spectrum will be probably February 18th, the J.C. Carroll retirement ceremony.
Fingers crossed.
Actually, that reminds me, talking about Utah State gymnastics, go back, find our interview with Utah State Gymnastics head coach Kristen White, and then a little bit of tease for the future. We are working on setting up an interview time with Aggie men's basketball great J.C. Carroll.
J.C. Carroll!
Oh, man, yes. That's going to be a fun one. Yep. I'm excited to talk to J.C. So thank you for listening to The Scotsman. Check out everything KSLSports.com related. He's Hu Tran. I'm Brian Preece. Have a great week.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now, too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.